From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Washington Post this week conducted an analysis of who engaged in property damage during the nationwide police protests after George Floyd's killing in Minneapolis. The paper concluded that people identifying themselves as Antifa were not involved, in spite of President Donald Trump's constant claims to the contrary. Instead, the Post reported four people who identify with the far-right extremist Boogaloo movement are among those facing the most serious federal charges. The findings were consistent with a new report by Political Research Associates called Mapping Paramilitary and Far-Right Threats to Racial Justice. Tarso Ramos is my guest. He is the executive director of a PRA. He's produced investigative research and analysis on the U.S. right to support social justice activists and advocates and defend human rights. Welcome to the program, Tarso.
Thank you, Sonali, for having me here and for the important work you do to bring independent reporting. It's never been more valuable than today.
I know, it's amazing to see how things have unfolded over these past couple of years and come to a head just in the past few weeks. First, let's talk about what it was that your report specifically did. You looked at the U.S. as a whole because of this nationwide uprising, this mass uprising, really spreading to almost every corner of the United States, which is quite remarkable. And it seems as though, judging from your report, along with those nationwide protests, you've seen a similar widespread proliferation and presence of small numbers of far-right groups.
That's correct. In the aftermath of the police murder of George Floyd and other high-profile police murders, we began to see far-right organizations, paramilitary, and other groups show up in relatively small numbers, but persistently, at sites of Black-led racial justice protests all over the country, from major locations like Minneapolis, DC, and New York, to small towns all over the country. And as you can imagine, this creates a lot of fear on the part of racial justice protesters and a lot of confusion as to the intent of these groups, some of which, especially in open carry states, are showing up with automatic and semi-automatic weapons and military garb and so forth. And so we started a project to monitor the presence of such groups at or nearby racial justice protests. And over the course of a few weeks, documented over 130 examples, ranging from intimidation and harassment to incidents of violence and even murder of law enforcement personnel by paramilitaries, including those associated with the Boogaloo Boys faction that you just mentioned.
So this is so interesting. There are a couple of things I want to parse out here. First of all, the fact that they have actually been injuring and killing and shooting at people and killing people, and they're not only aiming their weapons on protesters, but police. Why?
There are, in a general sense, two broad factions of the far right that are showing up at these kinds of protests. Some of them are white nationalists of the sort that are directly hostile to communities of color, to Jews and others, and seek to have confrontations with protesters directly. And there are others associated with certain militias, and including the Boogaloo faction, that are more interested in taking advantage of mass protests to foment chaos and violence, including violent confrontations with police, in order to accelerate a confrontation with the state. Some of them openly advocate for a civil war, and even the word Boogaloo is meant to suggest that a kind of a chaotic confrontation. They believe that the collapse of the nation state is inevitable, and notwithstanding some sympathy for Donald Trump, believe that the whole system is so controlled by socialists, leftists, and globalists, Jewish or otherwise, that it just must be brought down. And so you have the phenomenon of armed paramilitaries posturing as though they support Black-led protests, while you have other far-right factions clearly going there to cause trouble, to get into street brawls with anti-racist protesters. So Proud Boys, for instance, are there to street brawl with racial justice protesters, and Boogaloo Boys are there to cause trouble. And in at least a couple of incidents, we've had shootings at sites of protest. In Oakland, California, a a guard at a courthouse was shot and killed by an active duty Air Force member associated with the Boogaloo faction. And we've also had an incident in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where militia associated people shot at protesters who are taking down a statue, or trying to take down a statue of a white supremacist or a colonialist figure. And so we do have cases where even the accelerationists will tangle with and commit violence against protesters when they're defending sort of icons of white supremacy.
Right. The Oakland incident initially was thought to be one where maybe a protester, someone affiliated with Black Lives Matter, shot this security guard. Then it turned out to be this man, Stephen Carrillo. Is Carrillo someone who identifies with the Boogaloo Boys? Was his intent to foment this kind of, you know, civil war type scenario?
That was Carrillo's intent. He does affiliate with the Boogaloo faction. He wrote Boogs in blood, in his own blood, on the hood of his car before being captured.
As in short for Boogaloo.
Mm-hmm. As in short for Boogaloo. Of course, there's been a lot of distancing from Carrillo by others in the Boogaloo faction and other paramilitaries and militia in a way that is very reminiscent of what happened after the Oklahoma City bombing in the mid-1990s, where various militia factions immediately distanced themselves from Timothy McVeigh and Nichols and others, some of them undoubtedly for actual disagreements around ideology and tactics, and others as a PR move. And so we're seeing some similar noise right now around that. I do want to clarify that for protesters, for Black-led, for multiracial protesters for racial justice around the country, it's important to clarify that the largest threats of direct violence remain from law enforcement. There is a relationship between the presence of armed far-right factions at these protests, in that they contribute to intimidation and the militarization of protest space in ways that provide yet another pretext for militarized policing responses. But overwhelmingly, the danger and the violence that racial justice protesters have suffered have been at the hands of law enforcement.
Right.
The other thing to note is one of the most dangerous influences represented by the presence of these paramilitaries is likely their cooperation with law enforcement. Incidents where they're being supported by or cooperating with law enforcement around the targeting of racial justice protesters. And we have a number of documented examples of this as well.
In fact, let's talk about this group called the Three Percenters. There's been some police who have been documented to be wearing the insignia, even on tattoos on their body. Who are the Three Percenters?
Yeah, the 3% militia, which is also various well associated with another group, perhaps better known to many of your listeners and watchers, the Oath Keepers, are a paramilitary organization that recruits primarily the Oath Keepers out of law enforcement, ex-military, and so forth. And the 3% militia was notorious for many of its members being represented in the Bundy related occupation of the wildlife refuge out in Eastern Oregon a few years ago, just to give your folks some context. In any case, they are very actively engaged in many places with law enforcement, and we even have cases where, for instance, in Texas, a constable named John Shirley, who's on the board of directors of the Oath Keepers, has issued a call to action on behalf of a local saloon owner and authorized 3%ers to set up a perimeter of defense around that business. In Salt Lake City, we have an example where the 3% militia claimed that they had coordinated with local police to hold a perimeter against supposed rioters. And in the current wave of hysteria that is afflicting many smaller communities, towns, and cities across the United States, where there are these wild rumors of busloads of Black rioters or Black-clad Antifa protesters coming to riot and to destroy the local business districts. This is a meme that's been circulated and has been amplified in some cases by law enforcement, certainly by right-wing media. In those instances, we see a lot of presence of both paramilitaries, like 3%, and Oath Keepers, involvement of law enforcement in amplifying those stories. But we also see something even more troubling in a sense, Sonali. We see the mobilization of armed white people who are not directly affiliated with far-right paramilitaries that we can tell. Wow. And so what has started out is the presence of organized far-right paramilitaries that's kind of spread into a kind of defense patrol or siege mentality that's been fomented by the Trump regime and by right-wing media that is turning many more armed people out into the streets to defend against a fantastical and non-existent threat from the far left in black rioters, so-called rioters.
And of course, the same kinds of violence and threats of violence that Trump and the right wing attribute to Antifa are what's being fomented by these right wingers. I mean, it's Orwellian and highly ironic. I want to talk about the New Mexico incident in Albuquerque when there was an attempt by protesters to tear down a statue, and this group, the New Mexico Civil Guard, that's what they call themselves, were involved. Police, I understand, stood back initially. And it was only when one of those armed people actually shot a protester that the police walked up and arrested one of the shooters. They initially, I understand, arrested or detained several people, but then just arrested one person. How is this particular incident, which I know your report covers, indicative of the kinds of things we're seeing and can see more of in the U.S.?
Thank you for asking. That is a particularly alarming incident, but it does represent something of a trend, where we see increasing confrontation between armed white paramilitaries, whether accelerationists, that is, say, trying to bring down the state, or whether they are very clearly aligned with the Trump regime and standing for law and order. We see an escalation of confrontation specifically around monuments of slave owners, monuments to Confederate generals and other figures of the slaveocracy, or in the case of New Mexico, it was a statue of a conquistador, so a colonizer. And so this is a place of escalating conflict. And we see in right-wing social media a kind of twin narrative emerging around stepping up defense of these kinds of monuments to white supremacy, and also a strategy towards retaking the Seattle Autonomous Zone, for instance, or retaking areas claimed by Black-led multiracial protests for racial justice, specifically around July 4th, is a symbol of nationalism and patriotism. And so an important note to your followers, your listeners and watchers, is that we anticipate an escalation of white nationalists and ultra-nationalist pushback around that time period. PRA is continuing to update our incident map. And to your earlier question around cooperation or overlap between paramilitaries and law enforcement, we are encouraging tips. We think that this is a particularly important kind of incident to document at a time when the movement for Black Lives and other racial justice protesters are calling for disinvestment from policing and reinvestment into actual community safety and social services and other community needs, particularly in Black and Brown communities. We can all certainly agree that it is unacceptable for law enforcement, municipal, state, sheriff's offices to be actively participating or to have within their own ranks members of armed paramilitaries. And so we are increasing our documentation of these incidents in order to pursue action to bring this, to bring about an end to this. And we encourage your watchers to help us in crowdsourcing by sending us information at tips at politicalresearch.org. That's tips, T-I-P-S, at politicalresearch.org.
That's tips at politicalresearch.org. We'll link to that as well. And the report we've been discussing, Mapping Paramilitary and Far-Right Threats to Racial Justice, we'll also link to that. That can be found on the website. And it's really interesting. You can pick the point on the map and see exactly the documentation of the incident, which right-wing group was involved, the date, which state, what city, etc. So really interesting mapping. I want to go back to what you were saying earlier about the fact that the vast majority of instances of actual violence have just been caused outright by police. There's been a number of reports around that. Amnesty International this week released a lengthy report that showed widespread human rights violations at the hands of police that were completely disproportionate to any sort of instances or reports of property damage. Reuters did an analysis looking at hundreds of video documented police violence and found that only a handful had been prosecuted. Should we see the right-wing violence and these paramilitaries that are armed threatening violence as part of the spectrum of threats to racial justice activists alongside police?
Yes, I think it is fair to see policing and right-wing paramilitary, because there's a kind of call and response between the white supremacy of the Trump regime, for instance, and systemic white supremacy, and the white nationalist social movements that are responding to calls to action. Trump's Twitter feed, since the days of the presidential campaign ahead of the 2016 presidential election, called on followers, right, to respond to Black protesters at Trump rallies by roughing them up. We've seen the shooting starts tweets from President Trump. We saw that the provocation of his base to violence against any protesters at the Tulsa, Oklahoma rally that he held the day after Juneteenth. So this has been a constant kind of feature that has called Trump supporters and the more militant of them into the streets to take action. And there's a relationship too between Trump's Twitter feed and the mass shootings that we've experienced in this country, be it Pittsburgh or El Paso, or other kinds of things, where activists, militants, assassins of the far right are responding to Trump's definition of we the people, increasingly exclusionary ways that read out of the story of America and who's an American, who's the government for anyone who's not white in this country, and are calling through their actions on the administration to go to the logical conclusion of its own assertion around the kind of reimagining and awakening of a white nation. So the spectrum of white nationalists and other paramilitaries who are turning out at protest sites range from those who see Trump as a vehicle for the delivery of a future white ethnostate to those who have a softer notion of Trump as bringing about a kind of white redemption in the nation. And so there most certainly is a spectrum here from paramilitaries to law enforcement and from the social movement white nationalists to the white supremacist systems that are controlled, including by the executive branch and the white nationalists who've been brought into the most innermost circles of Trump's policymaking apparatus.
Tarso, clearly the federal government under Trump is not going to be interested as much in, or at least the Trump administration is not going to be as interested in tackling these real threats of violence, these real efforts at trying to foment violence on our streets. Although, of course, the FBI in some instances is investigating white supremacist groups. But what about local law enforcement and their cooperation with these right-wing paramilitaries? These are under the jurisdictions of city governments, right? I mean, cities are tolerating this sort of violence from their police departments and from the paramilitary groups that occupy these, that come to these protests, that see cooperation with police. I mean, we can't, obviously, the Trump administration is part of the problem, but that doesn't mean the rest of the country is part of the problem in terms of government authorities.
Well, it's a good point that there's a lot of action that we can take that doesn't require cooperation from the Trump regime. So it's important to emphasize that. It's important to note, for instance, that there is a very high overlap between sheriffs in this country and organized far-right networks, whether they are sheriffs who are mobilized and organized by national anti-immigrant groups like the Federation of American Immigration Reform, which has a specific sheriff's program, or the Constitutionalist the Sheriff and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA, which is a far-right network of sheriffs. Sheriffs are elected by local communities at the county level, and thereby can be unelected by will of the people. And so there's an opportunity to clean house here, just as there's been action taken in recent years to look at replacing hard right, white supremacist oriented, policing oriented district attorneys with district attorneys who are actually interested in justice, right, rather than incarceration. So there's local action that can be taken, and there's local accountability that can be laid at the hands of local mayors and police departments. Absolutely. As we reveal the density of overlap and cooperation between far-right paramilitaries and local police forces. I do want to say something, though, about Trump's response to all of this. We recognize that we're in a moment with massive, unprecedented, Black-led, multiracial protests and uprisings sustained for weeks now, nearly a month since George Floyd's murder. We have a situation where the regime is reeling from Supreme Court decisions, including on DACA and Title VII, that have not gone their way. An incredible embarrassment with the sparse turnout at the Tulsa rally that was meant to kick off and reignite the Trump re-election campaign. And we've also seen the administration on its heels because of its ongoing bungling of the worst global pandemic we've seen in a century. And so the regime is looking for a win, and it's leaning into this fantastical notion that Antifa, a loose orientation, it's not even a network or an organization of anti-fascist and anti-racist organizers, is somehow a terrorist threat, is kind of a last gasp. And it does seem to be having some positive effect from Trump's perspective, immobilizing his base in small town America. We saw recently, for instance, a mobilization in Bethel, Ohio. This is a town of maybe 3,000 people where 30 Black Lives Matters racial justice protesters turned out, and they were met with an overwhelming counter demonstration of people armed, some people with bats, sparking confrontations, pulling down their signs. And so there is a kind of call to a good old boys, a kind of Jim Crow era white community response to mobilize in defense of the white nation that is having some effect and has been amplified by right-wing media, by this administration, by law enforcement. I think it's a desperate attempt. However, we've already seen armed mobilizations around the reopen rallies, which were kind of like an armed call in response to Trump's call to reopen states, particularly under Democratic governors, to reopen them and liberate them from the tyranny, right, of socialism or something like this. So we see this kind of call, this performative call and response between Trump and an armed base that may prefigure a situation we could face in the fall should Trump lose the election but refuse to concede. Right. It's not hard to imagine he's already planted the seeds of massive voter fraud and this kind of thing. It's not hard to see the mobilization of an armed base ranging from these paramilitaries to regular townspeople all over the country, and that's of enormous concern.
Well, on that grim note, Tarsa, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to the study we were discussing, as well as the email address that you gave out for tips. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you again for the work that you do, Sonali. Hope to see you again.
Same here. My guest has been Tarsa Ramos, Executive Director of Political Research Associates, and we have been discussing PRA's new report, Mapping Paramilitary and Far-Right Threats to Racial Justice. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.